Let's go in-depth on Iowa State with the Des Moines Register. It's time for Cyclone Insider, powered by G-Migs 5th Street Pub on 1460 KXNO.
Welcome into another edition, Cyclone Insider, right here on 1460 KXNO, here with a couple of guys from the Des Moines Register, Tommy Birch, Randy Peterson. My name's Emery Sunger, sitting in the hot seat this week for the Insider. Fellas, how's it going?
Super. Beautiful.
Magnificent.
Oh, Jesus, you've always got some stupid word like that. If people only knew how magnificent we were. We've got a 4 o'clock game in Eastern time in West Virginia. It's supposed to rain. Sure.
Why not?
It seems like it's always raining when Iowa State plays at West Virginia.
It's always raining when Iowa State plays on Saturdays. It's always raining or 98 degrees.
Yeah. That's also true.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think. You know, the Louisiana Monroe game wasn't so bad. Right.
I thought it rained.
A little, but I think by the end of it, even the end of the TCU game ended up being like a nice
day. It was a gorgeous night.
Except for
it was a wonderful night.
Except for like the first 2 hours of the scheduled kickoff. It was just miserable.
Everybody was just hiding, you know, for that portion.
And I saw some people critical of a decision to delay it, but I mean, please. And that was a very small number of people. It was as soon as it was announced that the game was going to be 2 hours delayed. I mean, rain came down in buckets. I mean, and then you could see other games pop up in the Midwest. You know, stuff about being postponed or delayed, I should say. So it was a good decision.
Yeah, and I think by the time that, like you guys said, you could see even on TV when the sun came out, things. I mean, You could noticeably tell that it was a nicer day. And even the Iowa game, I mean, after we were able to survive through, you know, the first 3 hours of those delays, you know, it didn't turn out to be such a terrible night after that if you could just forget about all the rain that was dumped on Ames when that happened. Generally, guys, before we talk about West Virginia and the stuff that's coming up, I think a real nice bounce back here for Iowa State with 49 points. You felt good about the defense for the most part. There was a little segment of time there where TCU tried to work themselves back in the game. But, Tommy, I think overall, if you're an Iowa State fan, you have to be pretty pleased with what you saw on Saturday.
Yeah, Randy kind of wrote about this out of the game Saturday. I think all the concerns you had about Iowa State going into that game were at least answered for one game. Iowa State's inability to finish drives, they did that. Iowa State's ability to overcome mistakes. I look at that first drive Iowa State had where they had an ineligible receiver down the field. In the past, that's kind of been a penalty that's really kind of caused those drives to just end up being killers. They overcame stuff like that at times. They overcame, you know, the delay by 2 hours. I mean, that really threw both teams into probably a little bit of a funk. Third down defense was a big problem for Iowa State in the past. They did a good job there. So all those big question marks that had kind of been looming around Iowa State kind of at least got answered for one day. Do I feel confident that, hey, these are all fixed problems for good and from here on out? No, not entirely. I mean, and there are still issues, too. I look at the running game. Brock Purdy was great running the football. But I think if you're an Iowa State fan, man, you would feel so much more confident if one guy just really stepped to the plate and emerged as that running back. And Johnny Lang's kind of done that, but not at a level where I would feel 100% confident.
Yeah, Randy, when you follow a team like this and you know that there are two glaring players that were a part of the previous year's team, and all of the question marks are really about how you're going to maintain the production that you're losing from Hakeem Butler, David Montgomery. We asked these questions before the season. We knew that this was going to be something we were going to have to address throughout the early portion of this season, who's going to be the guys to step up. And the receiving core, I think, has done a really good job, and Brock Purdy's done a good job of spreading that out. And he's starting to find guys like DeShante Jones a lot, and he's becoming, you know, a go-to target. But this running back thing, we still have not figured this out, have we?
And we're not going to. I mean, I wrote last week, I broke the running game down totally, and I ended up saying that Iowa State will be successful in the running game if Brock Purdy gains 100 yards rushing. Boom, he gained 102 Saturday. I mean, it's yeah, I mean, I threw in the towel on the running game last week in a column, and you know, I mean, yeah, okay, Johnny Lang's had some nice, had a couple nice runs, but I don't know if he's a guy who can take 30 to 35 handoffs like Montgomery did, and he's no way he is. So it's got to be Brock Purdy, and here's the deal with Brock Purdy. As other teams start seeing the success that Iowa State has had on defense, with its drop eight defense, three linemen drop eight, they're starting to use that, and that works so much into Brock Purdy's favor because they're dropping eight. Go ahead and drop eight. And then, okay, gee, there's 6 yards. I'm gonna go run for that 6 yards. And so that's exactly what they're doing. I mean, it's Iowa State goes as Brock Purdy goes.
That's good, but and it's definitely great that Brock Purdy is taking what those opposing defenses are giving him. But it's kind of like I think I'd said before, man. I would still, and I'm in agreement with you that at this point, I don't know if somebody will really emerge as that go-to running back. But at some point, it's like, man, if you keep going with this type of game plan, you know, using Brock Purdy on the ground as much as you are, to a certain degree, you're playing with fire. And you're risking your most important playmaker getting hurt. And I think that's something that's got to concern you moving forward. At least be in the back of your mind worried about.
But this is no time to continue the tryout. I mean,
you
got to go with it. I mean, because Iowa State is 3-2. They can get on a roll. They can beat West Virginia. I think they're favored by a touchdown. They can win at Texas Tech. That's no big whip winning there. They can beat, then they come back and they can beat Oklahoma State. So they can get on a roll. It's no time to continue the tryout. I mean, I you know, go with it and then roll the dice. You know, you can. Iowa State's had quarterbacks get hurt a lot. So I mean, it's not.
It's more normal for that to happen than it is
for a lot of schools to have quarterbacks get hurt. I mean, it's not just Iowa State. I mean, it's. We look at it because we're in a bubble. We're in a vacuum because Iowa State is our vacuum. But a lot of schools have that. So I use him as much as it takes to win the game. I mean, they have to. There's no time left to see who can do what.
Well, and what you saw was just a good offensive performance generally, but the fact that he was able to get 100 yards rushing certainly helped keep TCU honest in the passing game as well. Now, let's go over here to Tommy for a second. And Randy, I'll ask you the same question. Is this a schematic thing? Is this the offensive line not being able to, you know, get their willpower up to move, you know, the front seven? Is this something where the running backs just don't have the same explosiveness or elusiveness that we saw from a guy like Montgomery? And this is why with basically the same offensive line, we're seeing more struggles than we did by a lot last year with Montgomery. What do you attribute this to? Is it Nwangu? Is it because we haven't seen him fully healthy yet? Is that why we're seeing the running game slow down? Because you would hope to find some answers, and you would hope not to have to rely on Brock Purdy. But as Randy said, you basically got to throw in the towel on it and just move forward with what you know will work.
Yeah, I think the problem is they just haven't found that one back that can utilize all those different skill sets that you want in your starting running back. You know, especially Iowa State, you want somebody that can run it well. You want somebody that can block it well. You want somebody that can catch balls out of the backfield, too. All of Iowa State's running backs have kind of shown a little bit of potential of what they can do. But every one of those guys, for as, you know, okay as they've looked at times, every one of those guys, you say, wow, this guy did this and that. Every guy ends up with a butt. You know, Sean Cronin Jr., first game of the season. Man, he ran the ball really, really well late in the game against you and I. But he fumbled and narrowly cost them the game. Kane Nwangu, man, he's got some explosive speed. He can do some great, great things. But he can't stay healthy. He isn't healthy. Even if he is healthy at this point, what's to make you think that he will stay healthy? Breece Hall, Jirell Brock, both those guys, you're like, man, they have shown you know, some abilities to maybe block, maybe run the ball a little. but they're true freshmen and haven't been consistent yet. Same kind of with Johnny Lang, too. So I think that in itself is the biggest problem, is that nobody has encapsulated that complete skill set of David Montgomery. You're not going to replace David Montgomery, but you need to have a little bit of all those areas of skill set that he had to, I guess, take the bull by the horns.
So, Randy, is it schematic? Yeah. Is it the line? Is it the backs? Where are we looking at here?
It's not schematic. It's not. It's I remember in the first game. I don't know who got. I can't remember who got the first handoff. But was it Johnny? Against Northern Iowa.
That's so long.
Whoever it was. I'm sitting next to Birch.
Somewhat
close. They've gone through five, or somewhat close to Birch. That the first handoff. You leaned over somehow to me and says, and said Montgomery wouldn't have gone down on first contact, and whoever it was went down on first contact. That's a problem. So it's not schematic. These guys are going down on first or second contact, whereas Montgomery did not. And at some point we have to forget that David Montgomery exists today, go with this. This is the new norm, and we all love David Montgomery, and he's doing wonderful things with the Bears. Time to move on from David.
Here's my other thing, too. This is perhaps maybe my little critique when it comes to, or maybe bugaboo when it comes to how Iowa State's handled this situation. To a certain degree, I want to see one guy go out there and just get the ball for an entire quarter or entire
even
half.
Even if they're not moving the ball?
What's that?
Even if it's not doing any good?
Yeah, I mean, especially against Louisiana Monroe. I mean, that's your chance. Or even at certain points during the TCU game, maybe at West Virginia is, your chance to really.
So what you're saying is, like, you're up a few scores, an opportunity to maybe have an extended 4-minute drive, 6-minute drive, and just see if you can get a guy in a groove.
Exactly. I think that probably dampens things a little bit too, where they are rotating so much in and out that if you're a running back, you can't help but look over your shoulder and know, okay, man, I got to break off a run right now. I got to do something big with this carry. I mean, obviously the skill set of David Montgomery was the best thing he had, but he also had kind of the solace of knowing, hey, I'm going to get the ball no matter what. There were times where he didn't get a yard every carry. There were times where every David Montgomery play was not a home run, but he was always going to get the ball back. And I think just at the very least, I mean, I don't know if maybe the answer is just cutting it down a little bit from five guys to maybe two or three something. I mean, that's something I'd like to see. I want to see somebody just maybe, I would say, go all in for a quarter on one guy and say, here's your shot.
What do you think, Randy?
It's that Iowa State's going to have to be up by more than two scores. And I don't know against whom that's going to happen. It's not going to happen this weekend.
Okay, so and we might have already passed the opportunity to mess around with this a little bit more, but is there an opportunity here where we're trying to limit hits on Brock Purdy because we don't want him to be like the most effective runner that we have? We also want to try to get the run game a little bit more effective without Brock Purdy having to have his hands on the ball. Are we missing an opportunity to maybe get Rial Mitchell figured into this equation a little bit more? Not necessarily as like a wildcat per se, but just a guy who has a little bit of explosiveness, a guy who, has some ball skills. We saw what he could do against Louisiana Monroe, and yes, I know it's Louisiana Monroe, but we had the Landram package a couple years ago that while you don't have a guy that's like a bruising fullback that can hang on to the football and read blocks and everything like Joel Lanning can, you also feel like you have an offensive weapon that's just kind of sitting on the bench, and you don't want to have to utilize him when Brock Purdy happens to get injured and has to miss some plays or miss some series. But I feel like he's an offensive weapon that early on in the season, you could have experimented with a couple of packages to try to get him utilized instead of having to rely on what has been an ineffective running attack.
Yeah, I think part of the reason why they didn't is maybe gamesmanship a little bit. I mean, you saw one play in the TCU game where they had lined up Brock Purdy at wide receiver, where and even threw a pass, I think, another time where Rial Mitchell lined up at wide receiver and they threw him a pass.
Yeah.
My thought was that's a play to keep in your back pocket, knowing, okay, and the next time Rial Mitchell's probably chucking that down the field. So maybe there's a reason why we haven't seen it so far this season, but this is the same question we asked last season. I remember at so many points where we're like, okay, this is the week Real Mitchell gets some playing time. This is the week. But yeah, I think the other thing that you kind of risk by throwing Real Mitchell out there so much is you do have to have him be all in as your backup quarterback right now, because like we had said, with how much Brock Purdy is running the football, with what history has told us, if you're Iowa State, you better have a reliable backup quarterback. Hell, you better have a reliable third-string quarterback if you're Iowa State. I think you probably want to limit how much you put on this guy's plate in terms of stuff outside of just running the offense as is, because he is one play away from going in and having to maybe save the season for Iowa State.
Real Mitchell needs to play more, and I think he will in various capacities. He's not going to be a running back. I brought that up somewhat in jest a couple weeks ago to Campbell. But I thought, why not? Why not? We've already got five out there. Why not throw a sixth out there?
And especially one that's
continue the tryouts.
Lightning fast, right?
Yeah, exactly.
He might be the fastest guy.
Exactly. But. Yeah. So I, you know, that didn't go anywhere. But and I was almost mentioned it in jest. I do that sometimes, but Campbell. But he's got to have the ball. I mean, he's got to be on the field doing something. And he's done enough that defensive coaches have seen on film that, okay, this kid's in the game now. We got to keep an eye on him, which may open stuff up for somebody else. So, and I don't know. We haven't seen what Real Mitchell can do consistently throwing the football. So, we'll just have to see what happens there. But I'm guessing that they use him, utilize him in different packages. You know, I think that's what you, this is maybe what you were alluding to, Tommy. I don't know for sure, but I'd like to see if, in fact, situation, you know, it presents itself that, you know, you could see maybe a double pass or something or a pitch out to Real Mitchell and he chucks it down the field or something.
It seems like that was the play that
maybe,
they were
possibly,
at least taking
that was,
look
yeah,
at.
It could have been.
In the TCU game and just the option to throw.
It ended up, exactly. But
I mean, they had that play with so many different guys, too, with DeShonte Jones, former quarterback, too, and now Real Mitchell. I mean, the thing is, too, I guess the simple way to answer this, too, is, look, you don't see a ton of trickery when it comes to Matt Campbell and Tom Manning's offense.
No,
every now and then you'll see something, but it's pretty basic and straightforward.
We're from the Mount Union School of Old School.
Exactly.
And that's what we're seeing, and that's what we'll see. That's their deal. So they've been successful.
And there's an opportunity maybe at some point to see that evolve throughout the rest of the season. But he does seem like an offensive talent that isn't necessarily going to waste completely on the bench, but you think that maybe the addition of him in some way, shape, or form could help the ailing running game a little bit for Iowa State. We'll go ahead and take our first break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the injury report, talk about the TCU game a little bit more in depth, and also preview the matchup this weekend going up against the Mountaineers of West Virginia. It's Cyclone Insider right here on 1460 KXNO.
Everything you need to know about Iowa State, it's Cyclone Insider with the Des Moines Register, powered by G. Migs Fifth Street Pub on 1460 KXNO.
Back here on Cyclone Insider 1460 KXNO. Emery Songer sitting in for Chris Williams, joined by Randy Peterson, Tommy Virch from the Des Moines Register. And guys, we talked a lot about the running game, but I want to also talk about the game at TCU besides what we saw out of the running game. We know that Brock Purdy had a nice game, not just running the football, but passing the ball. Defense had a couple of lapses, but for the most part looked the part. And Randy, I guess this Cyclone defense has not disappointed, I don't think, for the most part this season. Obviously, there were moments against Baylor as well that you're just kind of like, come on, guys, figure it out. But I still think that this defense is clearly the most talented group in the Big 12, and from what we've seen through a couple of weeks in league play.
Especially with what Iowa State did against what I thought was a very good TCU defensive team.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. Iowa State is the best defensive team, you know, when you look at all the numbers and throw them together and figure it out that way. Yeah, I think so. The front seven, we knew the front seven was going to be good. Well, Ryan Vance is the kid that came in and has been the, I don't know about surprise. I mean, it's
he's been a huge
we'd heard how good he was anyway, but yeah, he's been a difference maker, and he's been so good that it's allowed Mike Rose to change positions. So they've plugged that the linebacker void very nicely. So I guess it doesn't surprise me that the team is playing very good defense. Now they're going to have to be on their game on Saturday because whatever his name is, Kendall Austin. He's going to chuck it.
Right, yeah.
They had over 50 passing plays called last week. So he's going to, and he threw four interceptions. He's going to pitch it. So, I mean, Iowa State secondary is going to be tested. So, and if anything, that's been the I don't want to say weak spot, but that's been the concern is Iowa State secondary. And Iowa State is dead last in the conference in interceptions anyway with two. And they, you know, they, and I know, I can tell you, I can remember them dropping two. So, I think the secondary has to play, but the front seven or eight or whatever it is, those kids are good.
Yeah, Brewer from Baylor had moments there where you're just kind of like, we can't stop the guy. Yeah. They're calling passing plays, it's hard to stop. You know, Tommy, we can say that to the same point, too. We have to keep in mind that Max Duggan is a true freshman for TCU, and Iowa State's front definitely gave him some fits throughout. Ryan Vance has been unbelievable, by the way. 6.5 sacks so far this season, which has been... I think that number is a surprise through five games for sure. But
I'll go ahead and say he has been a surprise story for me because I know, yeah, he was, you know, we expected big things out of him out of that first year coming out of high school. and the coaches just raved about his potential. But when he didn't get that starting spot, you kind of thought, man, I kind of thought he might be a Jake Hummel type guy, the guy that comes in for some important snaps here and there, but isn't a starter or every down type of guy. But he has become one of the biggest stars of that defense. And, I mean, to put it this way, Todd McShay was calling the Iowa State-Baylor game, and a few of us asked McShay just about the pro potential of some of those guys. And I remember he said, you know, I asked him, what other guys are you kind of looking at when it comes to Iowa State guys? And he goes... You know, he mentions, you know, Charlie Kohler at tight end, and he had talked about Brock Purdy, and he brought up Greg Eisworth. And he goes, then the linebacker, and I'm thinking, I think I said to him, Marcel Spears?
Yeah.
He goes, Vance. And he's like, man, pound for pound, that kid is, you know, one of the best, you know, players on that defense. So it's been pretty remarkable what he's done this season.
Okay, so what did you see, Tommy, from the way that they were, you know, getting Max Duggan a little bit uncomfortable there? And I think we noticed the defense when Eisworth was off the field, there was a little bit of a hole there that they were not able. We already talked about, you know, the back end, Randy mentioned it, the back end, there's still a lot of question marks there, but the front has been so good. What did you see with the way that they were kind of messing with Max Duggan, and they're going against another inexperienced quarterback this weekend as well?
The most impressive thing that I saw was how Zach Peterson, you know, the true sophomore, was able to consistently disrupt, you know, the backfield of TCU. There were at least three times where he got to the backfield and had a chance to sack the quarterback where I felt like he was almost playing too fast, that, you know, he showed that inexperience. He showed that raw talent that he was able to get into the backfield and nearly make a sack. But then he showed that inexperience, like, okay, I just got to find a way to finish those plays, slow it down a little bit more. And I thought that is a huge confidence builder for Iowa State moving forward, where I'm guessing TCU probably thought, okay, we're not going to worry too much about Zach Peterson. This is the guy that's filling in for Jaquan Bailey. This is going to be his first start. We don't have to pay too much attention to him. He really made them pay, and I think really shows everybody else in the Big 12 that, yeah, Iowa State misses Jaquan Bailey, but they have the potential to still be very, very good. I mean, I thought the way Zach Peterson played may have been better than any game we've seen from Jaquan Bailey this season, at least.
Well, an interesting point, but I know that most people in the Iowa State camp would love to see Jaquan Bailey back on the field. So what have you guys kind of heard about his availability moving forward? Because this is certainly, Randy, a guy that makes your defense better, even if a guy like Peterson really shined in his absence.
Yeah, getting back to Peterson, Campbell has called. He'll do it again today. I guarantee you. He'll do it again this week. He'll say that Zach Peterson has been the best, most consistent defensive player all year, which is says something because you've got Ray Lima up there as well. But as far as Jaquan, yeah, Iowa State will miss him. I think if he plays the rest of the year, that would be a surprise to me because he had surgery on some bone in his lower leg. And the fact that he did have surgery, that means a month out at least, I would guess. And so, since they do have Zach Peterson, I don't know whether there's really a rush to get him back. And plus, he played as a true freshman. He's played four games this year. So under that two-year-old NCAA rule, he can come back and play again and play a full season next year. He could take a medical redshirt. Now, whether he does that or not, I don't have any idea. Whether he chooses, once he gets healthy again, whether he chooses to focus his attention on somehow trying to get into an NFL camp next year, and because I don't know whether he's good enough to be drafted, but somehow getting into a camp, then he can go that route. If he wants to come back, he could go that route too and possibly start on the same defensive line with his brother, because he and his brother are as close as, my gosh, anybody that they're close, let's just say. So Jaquan's got options, and I really feel bad about what happened to him, because he was a lot of a loose cannon when he was a freshman and sophomore. I mean, he'd do stupid things out there on the field. Everybody remembers when he somersaulted or whatever it was after doing something great against Kansas State or whoever it was, Texas game. But he's matured so much. I mean, this kid has become a rock solid citizen, and it really, I feel bad for him, but he does have options.
My guess is, when it comes to Jaquan Bailey, if we see him again, this season is basically up to him. If he's deciding, hey, I want to go, I want to give up, on college after this season, I want to go test the NFL waters, which there's going to be NFL interest, but I don't know if there's enough of it yet where he's got to say, like, wow, I've got enough on film, I've done enough, that I'm going to get drafted. I'm going to get drafted high. I almost think Jaquan Bailey's the guy that, for his maybe best interest, should redshirt this season, come back, have a full season under his belt, show NFL people what he can do. But if he decides, hey, I'm done after this season, he may come back at the very end of the year and play one or two games. I mean, that option's certainly out there. I would tend to lean more on the side that we may see him again at the very end of the season, because my thought is he may not be coming back after this season.
It's something that we'll have to keep. You guys are on the beat. You're going to kind of be able to feel that a little bit better as time goes on. But certainly when you have a guy like Zach Peterson who shows what he can do when he's out there, you still like the idea of having Jaquan Bailey out on the field, but you also know that you're not necessarily missing him as badly as you could, thanks to the depth that Coach Campbell and the rest of the defensive staff have put together there as well. Another thing that I just want to touch on briefly before we head into kind of previewing West Virginia is on special teams. We talked about the return game, just kind of, it hasn't been very strong this year, and you could talk about punt returns and kickoff returns. You talk about blunders and just generally having some problems there. But one noticeable factor is the no man's land between field goal attempt and punt is about as big as I remember seeing for any team at the Division I level, where basically anywhere between like the 27-yard line and the 40, Coach Campbell and Coach Manning and the rest of the offensive staff, they basically are preparing, if it's within fourth and five, they're going to go for it because they don't want to have to trot out Connor or Sally to attempt a long field goal. Has an attempt to 50 yard. He's only 1 for 3 from 40 plus so far this season. His long is 42. Is that certainly is a cause for concern? Am I wrong?
No, I mean, it was an issue last season, too. I mean, you saw kind of the ability for him to at least make that long kick every now and then. But, yeah, anything outside of 40, I think 44, was kind of a problem for Connor Sally. And he said throughout the offseason, look, I've fixed that. I've gotten better. That was the area of emphasis heading into this season to fix. And Iowa State let him show. They kind of gave him that shot to say, okay, if you worked on it, you got better, we're going to throw you out there. They gave him a couple of 49 attempts at Baylor. He missed one, got another one blocked. I don't know if that's on him, but, you know, look, it happened. Now they've gotten to a point where I think they've said, look, we gave you your shot. We gave you your shot last season from that distance. We don't have much faith in that part of your game. So I think anything outside of probably 42, you're looking at Iowa State possibly going for it or just punting it away and probably leaning on the side punting it away because Matt Campbell says he loves going for it on fourth down, but really he really doesn't like going for it that much. He loves playing the field position game.
The numbers do not support him loving going for it.
He may in theory love the idea of going for it,
but he hardly ever does.
Yeah, he is very conservative, kind of like what we talked about with his play calling, too.
You're rolling the dice with the punter, too.
Yeah.
I mean, the punter likes to, sometimes I think, likes to see how far he can kick it, when instead of pooching it down inside the 5-yard line or whatever it was, he kicks it into the end zone. And then I just don't get that one. But yeah, so Iowa State's punting game's not been great either. Kane Nwangu, I'm not going to bash the special teams totally, but he had a nice kickoff return. I think that's his niche. I don't think he's, you know, if he's healthy enough to do one thing, they need him at kickoff. They need him on kickoff returns. But yeah, the special teams have not been great. And I don't know why they don't even try another field goal kicker, to be honest.
Well, and that's what I was going to ask.
I don't know, or whoever it is.
Well, you know, when you look at the roster, there are five place kickers that are on the roster, and they have one senior, Peyton Paddock, Monticello native, Asali. There's another junior, Eddie Ogamba, who's on the roster from Robbinsdale, Minnesota, and then you got a couple of freshmen, Braden Narveson from Scottsdale, Arizona, and Drake
Nettles.
He's
on scholarship.
That's a kid that was supposed to be good. I thought he'd be the starter.
So what are we waiting for?
I think boom. Right now it's just been massive inconsistency. I mean, that was kind of the storyline at least going into camp last season, and it sounded like there may have been a little bit of a battle going into this, you know, this season, but at least you had the experience of Connor Sally. For what he has struggled with outside of 40, everything inside of there has been pretty much money in the bank. And I think for the most part, you'll see that at a lot of colleges, obviously, once you get to some of those, you know, elite, you know, national championship or college, you know, conference contenders. You've got those money kickers that can hit 45, 50 yards. But overall, you aren't going to find many kickers that are just consistently drilling 45 and beyond. And I think if you're Iowa State, I think you kind of live with that idea, knowing that, okay, anything 45 in, you kick. Outside of that, you're probably punting it and playing the field position game.
Unless you're like fourth and one or two, probably.
Yeah, and even then, I mean, man, now I think the conversation is so much easier to have, knowing that you probably aren't going to go for it then, because it's like we said before, you don't have David Montgomery. You don't have that guy that you feel confident saying, right, my guy is going to go get you that 1 yard.
It's an interesting topic of conversation, and one that I think we'll have to continue to have, because we saw how important the special teams game was when we saw Baylor's kicker, who had never made a field goal in his life and really struggled during that day, come through with a huge clutch kick to win that game against Iowa State.
I mean,
last
two,
week.
2 years ago, when Iowa State had that great season, when they won the Liberty Bowl, knocked off so many people in last season, it's a great season, too. Iowa State had special teams issues last season, too.
Yeah.
But 2 years ago, they were dynamite in all those areas, not just kicking field goals, not just returning, you know, the return game, but punting, you know, setting up great field position. You know, it was so important for Iowa State back then when they didn't have the talent that they have now. Now, you almost see them kind of getting away with it a little bit more because they have the talent, but you get the feeling like, man, they got to shore up a couple of those areas, or we'll come back to bite them in the butt at some point.
Yeah, they're going to have to win both of these games coming up on the road, West Virginia, Texas Tech, to set themselves up for what will be a little bit tougher portion of the schedule, of course, with Oklahoma and Texas looming later on this year. We'll take our final break. When we come back, we're going to go ahead and give you that preview of the West Virginia game this week. It is Cyclone Insider on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
Everything you need to know about Iowa State, it's Cyclone Insider with the Des Moines Register, powered by G. Migs Fifth Street Pub on 1460 KXNO.
All right, back one final time for Cyclone Insider. My name's Emery Songer, sitting in for Chris Williams, Tommy Birch, Randy Peterson from the Des Moines Register. And guys, it's now time to take a look ahead to what we have on Saturday. West Virginia hosting the Iowa State Cyclones. What should be a ball game that Iowa State feels good about going into. It's a 3 p.m. kick. ESPN is the television. You can, of course, hear that on our sister station, 100.3 The Bus. Randy, I want to start with you. We were wondering where the line was going to be, and I think Chris Williams guessed it was going to be around 3. Mm-hmm. Iowa State was going to be maybe a 3-point favorite. They opened up, I think, at like a 7-point favorite, and it opened up to already 9 in Iowa State's favor right now. What do you make of that, and is that the betting public knowing that Iowa State's the more talented team, or do the betting public just, they don't have any faith in West Virginia?
Both.
Okay. Fair enough.
I never ride the fence, but I got to agree with you on that one. It's both. And I'm sure the line will fluctuate a lot. Betting lines this year for Iowa State have really fluctuated a lot. I mean, Iowa State started out the week of the Iowa game favored and went into the game as an underdog. So yeah, the whole line is weird. But Iowa State should win the game. Maybe by 2 scores. I don't know. I don't know. But it's at West Virginia. But I don't know whether that's that big a deal or not. I've seen Iowa State win there. I've seen them lose there. West Virginia played well last week at home against Texas. Other than Kendall's four interceptions, but.
But you said they sling it. I mean, they believe in throwing the football a lot.
But and I'm just looking at their statistics now. They don't jump out. Nothing pops. They don't have any running back.
No.
In the top.
You don't talk about a team that can't run the football.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there'll be two teams that can't run the football. Yeah, no, that's true. But edge to Brock Purdy there, because Brock Purdy's a better runner than the West Virginia quarterback.
Right.
As far as defense, total defense, I don't know. West Virginia's not done anything that's jumped out at me in that deal either. So I really think that like I said earlier, this is a good chance for Iowa State to get on a roll, if in fact it can play consistently good football like it did last week.
Yeah, if you look at Austin Kendall's passing statistics as well, he is completing about 66% of his passes, but 9 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. He's also been sacked 8 times. Rating, the way the college game does the ratings, 128.8. Mm-hmm. For Brock Purdy, I mean, all of his numbers are much better. He's 71% completion percentage, 10 touchdowns, only 2 interceptions. He's been sacked 6 times, but that is, it seems like it's cleaning itself up a little bit, and I think his ability to run has helped him avoid sacks by getting across the line of scrimmage, but his rating, 165.2. So, Tommy, when you look at this matchup here, across the board, it seems like Iowa State has more advantages, obviously, than disadvantages, but I'm not real sure that there is a specific disadvantage that I can see, except maybe in the special teams game.
Yeah, and I think that's not even enough to really make you think, okay,
it's, man, a push at worst. Right?
Yeah, this really going to play a giant impact on Iowa State. For the most part, it's one of those games where you look at Iowa State and say, hey, just fix up everything that you had fixed up against TCU and you're going to be fine. You know, finish off drives, get stops on third down, win the turnover margin. Just don't turn it over. Turnovers, more importantly than Iowa State getting turnovers, more importantly, they just need to not turn it over, because it's been silly turnovers that have been massively costly. I mean, all you have to do is go back and look at the Iowa game, even the end of the Baylor game. You know, I think we sometimes forget, man, Iowa State had some time there to move the clock. It wasn't much. At least try to set up for a field goal. I think we kind of forget about that, and then they turn it over. So for Iowa State, it's just, you know, do those simple things and you're going to be fine, because you are the more talented team. You're the better team. Even though you're on the road, I'm with Randy. You should win by two scores.
Okay, so is there a specific guy, Randy, that may, I don't, let's try not to say Brock Purdy because we know he's going to be important, but is there another guy that you think is going to be a key offensively for the Cyclones if they're going to, maybe not 49 points, but certainly put up a big number to make that a little bit easier on that defense?
I'll say a position, the tight ends, Charlie Kohler or Chase Allen.
And they've both been very important.
They have been. They have been. And I'm assuming that opposing defenses will have finally figured out that Purdy's is looking at DeShonte Jones first. So take away that option, because Purdy's not throwing long anyway this year. He's not throwing long. He's throwing the mid-range pass, and then the DeShonte Jones or whomever's catching it is turning it into a bigger play. So, given that, I think if a tight end, if Kohler or Chase Allen gets into open space, because I'm not certain they're running true routes. I think they might be just running into space, which, you know, happens all the time. I think they're running to space. There'll be spaces if the teams are figured out that the first option is DeShonte Jones. So they're going to have, I think that position is, and it granted, we're talking Purdy being half of that, but I think those two guys are going to, this is a chance for those two guys to have big game. It's a chance for that position to have a good game regardless of who they're playing.
You talk about, you know, the wide receiver position. We almost dismissed what the tight ends are going to be able to do, and Brock Purdy has shown the ability to really look for those guys, especially when you get close to the red zone. And he looked at both of those guys for scores last week. Tommy, from your vantage point, defensively, is there a guy? I know when I mentioned Iceworth. He missed, you know, some time later on in the second half in the TCU game, and you could see just how important he is to that defense, because TCU started then to move the football when Iceworth wasn't out there. We know that we had a great game from Peterson. We also talk about, you know, defensively what Iowa State brought to the table with guys like, you know, Orion Vance, who has been fantastic so far. We're looking for, you know, Mike Rose has been, I think, really good, but, you know, maybe he could even take another step up in terms of his production. But is there a guy that you specifically are looking at and say, look, this guy either is due for a big game, or if he has a big game, it'll set the Iowa State defense up for success?
Oh, one name I kind of had in the back of my mind is Braxton Lewis, because at times when Braxton's been out, that's kind of been a noticeable change too. I know Justin Bickham has had some moments, but man, there have been some big-time struggles.
Pretty much anybody who's not a first-string D-back has been...
Yeah, the drop-off has been
big,
pretty big. So, you know, I guess the other one I go with is kind of Zach Peterson, too, where his ability to disrupt the backfield so far has been unlike anything we've seen from an Iowa State D-lineman this season. I mean, we've seen it in the past, but then... Also, offensively, I'm going to go with DeShonte Jones for the fact that usually we've seen that when him and Brock Purdy get clicking early on, that's kind of been Brock Purdy's security blanket, knowing that, okay, once he gets a couple of easy tosses, quick tosses to DeShonte Jones, that's kind of what's been the key to, I guess, getting him into a rhythm. So I say DeShonte Jones has... Every game, for the most part, has been a big game for him. But if he has a really strong start early on, that usually bodes well for what type of day Brock Purdy is going to have. Because, you know, even though Brock Purdy has had this great, great season, there have been moments. I mean, I go back to the Baylor game in Waco. I mean, he was not firing on all cylinders.
Those first three quarters were tough to watch.
Yeah, and that's what ultimately doomed him. So, I think if you see him getting a good connection with DeShonte Jones early, that really builds his confidence, and that is an important thing. He is only a sophomore quarterback.
Okay, Randy, what do you see being a potential final score here on Saturday?
I wrote down 34-24 as we were talking Iowa State. I think West Virginia can keep it somewhat close, but I'm not that impressed with West Virginia. Neil Brown is a good coach. But I don't think he's got the horses to beat Iowa State.
If Iowa State was able to beat Will Greer and Dana Helgerson,
and hold Will Greer to 100 yards passing.
Yeah, I know it was in Ames, and I know it was a special blackout night. The crowd was crazy. I get that, but if Iowa State last year was able to beat West Virginia last year, you would think that Iowa State could certainly beat West Virginia this year, even if it is on the road. What do you think, Tommy?
Let's be honest. West Virginia is really not that daunting of a road environment to go into.
Unless you're Texas.
Right. Unless you're Texas, yeah. But
horns down.
It's really not that... really that tough of a road matchup for Iowa State. I mean, I don't know about final score. I'd say maybe like 28-17, something like that, where, you know, the score is going to make it feel like it's a lot closer than it actually is, where I think you feel like, man, Iowa State's usually in complete control of this game. I mean, even the TCU game, the score... for as lopsided as it was, it felt like Iowa State was way more in complete control, besides maybe that little six-minute stretch in the second half.
I think that this is an opportunity, and I said before the season multiple times, this back-to-back freaked me out. I thought that both of these games were incredibly winnable, but it just is a super Iowa State thing of the past to do when you have high hopes to drop one of these games. After seeing what they did to TCU, I feel a lot better about the way that they're going into this West Virginia game and the way that Texas Tech has been playing and attempting to tackle people. I also feel good about prospects to maybe take these two games and, like Randy said, try to get on a positive roll here before you really get into that thick part of the schedule with Oklahoma and Texas as well. Fellas, how can people find you on Twitter and see what you're writing with the Register?
At Randy.
What am I? At Randy Pete. I'm not a big Twitter person. I don't.
He's got one.
And I don't go searching for Twitter.
He's got tens of thousands of followers.
At Randy. So. Okay.
You want to throw your Instagram and Periscope?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. You got one of those.
I'll get back with you on those. I'll get back with you.
All right. And Tommy, how can people follow you?
Just at Tommy Birch.
So easy. And I'm at Emery Songer. It's interesting how we were able to get those handles.
We jumped on the hot commodity.
We jumped on those names before people realized that they were very important, right?
The Register did mine for me.
Hey, you know what? It's worked. Tens of thousands of followers over here with Randy Pearson. Fellas, this is a fun talk. We appreciate it. We'll chat with you again next week.
Cool. Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, anytime. My name's Emery Songer. That is Randy Peterson, Tommy Birch from the Des Moines Register. This has been Cyclone Insider. We thank you for joining us. Have a great week, Cyclone fans, and good luck to the Cyclones later on this week against West Virginia. You have a good one. It's been Cyclone Insider on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.